Love Talk Radio.
Hello. Hello. Bruce, can you hear me?
Good evening,
and welcome to the Man's Voice. Bruce, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you well.
That's good.
Yeah, it is good because it's just you and me.
I can't get my computer to work right, so I'm on my phone.
Okay. That's good. Well, you're there. It's better than the rest of them. I wonder what we can do to the man's voice. Bruce and I can talk about, because we have always had conversations. So Bruce, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. You asked about the weather up here. It's winter in Michigan, but hasn't been too bad. We had some really cold weather, but lately in the last week or so, it's just been normal Michigan weather.
But you got snow coming tonight.
Oh, we do again?
Yes. I was looking at your weather a little earlier.
What's going on down there?
We're just dreary. A little rain and, you know, dark and irregular, you know, Atlanta weather. A little cold.
No, but we're supposed to have an early spring, according to Mr. Ponchitone Phil.
But he hasn't been right in the last few years.
Well, let's hope he's right this year.
Yes, let's hope. Let's talk about something real quick, technically, Bruce, and I just need to know if you can hear me.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
There's no echo either.
Good. We like it when it works. Let me talk about this wall piece, because that seems to be the biggest thing everybody's talking about. And let's just get it out of the way. So do you think this shutdown piece that was supposed to happen, it's still up in the air. The president didn't get what he wanted, but then he signed the bill to keep the government going, but with a threat that if he doesn't get what he's going to do, there's going to be a shutdown. What do you see coming?
Well, the thing that frustrates me is, as we've heard both sides say, but they stomp their feet. I'm talking both sides now, and whine and cry about it. They both, in their own way, say, "Oh yeah, we got to have a secure border." And I think almost all America would say, "Yes, we have to have a secure border." Now, the definition can vary, but President Trump, although I think you've heard me say this, I think his heart's in the right place. He, like when he was in the Rose Garden this week, he said, you know, I don't have to call an emergency, but I'm going to. Why would you say that? It's like he likes to poke people, you know, like I don't, and that's counterproductive, not only to himself as the president, but to the two parties getting together. What you need to be, and he's skilled at this, he's done deals and business deals his entire life, and for any almost any measure, he's been pretty good at it, is why doesn't he approach these things, the two parties, Republican, Democrat, as a business deal? You know, you don't aggravate the other party in the deal if you want to get a deal that you can both be happy with and live by. But it seems like when he's on the uptick, he always wants to poke and agitate with his words, and I'm struggling to try and find out why he does that. At least that's my take on it. Where you know, and who cares if we call something a wall? Who cares what the mechanical names are? Let's agree on a way to secure the border that both parties can agree with.
Right. I agree, but one of the things that to combat on what you said, is to comment on that, he hasn't been very successful in a lot of his businesses, so it may just be, you know, we all think that he is good at it. Maybe he's not as good as, you know, and maybe the people in the back, usually, you know, a lot of guys up front, it's the guys in the back that make your business work. But it seems when
he
it doesn't work that well.
Yeah, in other words, he doesn't have the same team in the presidency business as he did in his corporate business. That
right,
may very well be true.
Keeps changing. It keeps dropping out because, you know, they don't know how he's working or something, they can't figure out. And that's not good for business when your team moves, keeps losing your team. So I do hope that this gets over with. But, you know, one of the things,
David, I don't think it's gonna. I'm with you. I want it to be. But they just can't seem to bring themselves, I mean all of them, the collective parties, together. And even, let's say for a moment you're right, David, that the group he has around him now isn't as good, isn't as talented, isn't as up to par. I don't know that, but let's say that for a moment. He is the president of the United States, just like Obama was, just like Bush was, just like Clinton was. You have to find a way to work with the players that are there for the time that they're there, the public, and we can debate about this, but for the moment, let's say the public elected him into the office. You may totally not like his policy, but you have to work with the boss that's in charge. And for the life of me, we've gotten to a point now where we used to kind of do that. We'd bellyache and complain about the other side, but we'd find a way to agree on something. Now, they don't even want to agree on anything anymore. And you and I and the rest of the public listening tonight and those that aren't are just getting sick and tired of this constant bickering instead of producing some kind of result.
So after all that's been going on, do you actually feel the wall is something we need?
I think absolutely in some way we need structural barriers. I don't care what you call it. Some kind of a physical barrier. Do we need it everywhere? No. Has he said so? No. But then, okay, if we can agree that there's some places where we need structural barrier, then the places where we don't have it, what do we need there? Or what do we need to complement the places that don't have a structural barrier? This is what we should be hearing from the intelligent people we've put in office, both sides. And we're not hearing that, are we?
No, we're definitely not hearing that.
We're not. You and I could go in there with just a hand-picked group of people and make points to the House and the Senate that should be obvious. It's obvious to all of us out here in the arena watching the battle inside the ring, but it just both of them seem to be too obsessed with, well, I got to win. I got to win. My side's got to win. No. The only side that needs to win is the people of the United States. Now, you two sides figure out how you can put together something that the people of the U.S. win. That's the only winner they should be concentrating on.
Agree with you on that. We here at The Man's Voice have been discussing gun control, and we came to the conclusion we really don't know what's going to happen or where it's going to go. But this morning, the CEO of Delta Airlines came out and said they are no longer offering NRA discounts, which they did before. I think Pelosi was the one who said if there's a Democrat who wins the nomination or wins the White House next go round, the first thing they're going to do is do gun control laws. So it looks like things are beginning to move. Things are beginning to move, and it might take February every year for things to move, because that's when the Parkland event happened a year ago, and now we see movement. And so I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my true belief is, in some regards, with the information and detail I've heard, we do need some more control on firearms, or background checking, or some way to weed out in a better, more appropriate, more effective way those that shouldn't have their hands around a firearm. You will never, nor would I support, personally, some kind of action that takes all the guns away from all the people in the United States. Because think about this. A lot of country love-abiding citizens that own firearms, you could develop a real fear, a real concern, and a real anger, all three, with people just being told, you can't have these anymore. Your right's gone. And do we really want to create, I think, could be even a more hostile, I don't know what other description to use, environment. I do agree, though, with many people that say we've got to do a better job of finding those that shouldn't. But I will always believe, sadly, I don't like it, but I'll always believe that the people that really want to get a gun that illegally shouldn't have one will find a way to get one. That's just unfortunately the way it is. We grew up in this country with that being one of the rights, and to take that right away, I don't see that ever happening. Not totally. I really don't.
I think it would open types of firearms that you would be allowed to have.
What's that?
There could be a restructuring of the type of firearms you would be allowed to have, the type of shotgun or the type of pistol, or these are the ones that you're allowed to have. Outside of that, they could become illegal. You think that would cause havoc also?
Well, I would lean in your favor of what you said, David, for this reason, and that not just specifically what you said, but there are certain kinds of firearms right now that are illegal to have for you and I to have in the public. An automatic machine gun, you can't have one. You're not supposed to possess one. It's illegal. So should there be other types of maybe firearms? Yes. Who decides that? Let's get the right people in the room. And I think that should involve the pro gun supporters, the anti gun supporters, the general public, the legislative. I don't care. A good combination of people that represent all sides of the issue, and let them come up with something that works. Like you and I have joked about before, and I have with others, lock them in a room and say you don't even get a potty break until you come up with a solution. You're staying in there till you come up with a solution. And I want to keep going back to the foundation of how this country was built and how it's supposed to run. And I wouldn't have a problem if that group came up with here's three or four other kind of guns you cannot have anymore legally. No. I don't think I'd have a problem with that if they could state their case and say these are the reasons why. You don't know the history behind that any more than I do, but if this group with their resources and the people in that group decide that, well, then let's hear that. Let's hear a sensible reason why other certain kinds of guns should not be in the public hands. I'm willing to listen to that, aren't you?
I am. And you're listening to The Man's Voice, and you're listening with me, Bruce Cooper, who is actually in snowy Michigan, or cold Michigan.
Yes.
It'll be snowy tonight, cold Michigan right now. And we have others on the panel, but they'll be coming in later. There are some technical issues with pulling it in, and we apologize for that. Continue, and if you'd like to, you can call at 666-687-40 and join the conversation. Okay, Bruce, I'm going to change a little bit, but hang on with me because this is something that's going to be kind of, you know, I don't know where it can go, and it's delicate, but this, one of the things that I've noticed lately, like the governor in Virginia, the lieutenant governor. Ladies are coming out saying, you know, that he sexually abused them, and he's saying it was consensual, and which, you know, so men, there seems to be a lot of, when men are in power right now or getting in power, there seems to be a lot of all of a sudden women coming to the surface saying, well, he abused me. And, you know, I can see where, you know, a consensual relationship could be, you know, for a person trying to get a name out or say out or just to hurt somebody, just come up with, well, he sexually abused me. So my thing is, where is, there's no line to say, you know, what I've noticed is everybody, immediately everybody thinks the gentleman is wrong and that's the end of it. There's no, well, if it was consensual, lady, tell us how your side. So nobody's listening to both sides, and the men are suffering because of this, and the women are getting power because of this. So if you take out the Democrats and Virginia, the next person down the line is a Republican. So if you were a multimillionaire and you wanted to get somebody in position and you offer these people a lot of money, go tell this story and we will give you all this money, that's a possibility. So we have a check and balance on this, and I think it's hurting, you know, it's ruining people's lives, and I think that's not good. I also, the other side is, if it did happen, that's ruining people's lives and it should come out. But right now what we're saying in Virginia, if you look at it, nobody's saying the other side, well, you're saying that this was consensual, let us sit down and let's hear the story, you know, and then make a decision. And after this, the story is, it was consensual on one side, but he's saying it was, she's saying it's not. Who makes the decision? What are your thoughts on that, Bruce?
Well, hearing you, listening to what you're saying, David, we're in a different mindset now, like you said, where if someone yells something or says something, say, well, I'm going to be immediately, it's going to be believed, and here we go. That's not to say that there may also be an environment where people feel more comfortable in coming forward with real cases. That's
right.
That's in the mix too.
I tend
to agree with you. One of the common factors that I keep going back to, you've heard me say this, is I'm really concerned that the public press, and I say that in a generic sense, media, news media, no matter left, right, or in between, have a moral responsibility to try to be as factual as they can. And they even, my opinion is, they've even in many cases come to the point where we can influence friends and gain notoriety and whatever by giving our opinion. And since we are so powerful, we can sway people back and forth based on what we want to see. If I can use it, the Hippocratic Oath that hopefully, or the oath that someone took, is journalism. That's not in the definition of journalism. That's supposed to be you present the facts, the information, as best you can, knowing full well you know whether you're slanting something or not. And we have to get people back out of that, because the press could be such a positive influence in just making you and me and every one of your listeners think about coming up with what's right and wrong. If they present the facts as untainted as possible, let us make the decision. I don't want you to make the decision for me. I don't want you to sway my... If I want your opinion, I'll ask for an opinion piece. If I want to be informed so I can make an intelligent decision on my own, so you can, so your listeners can, then that's what I want first. If I want your opinion, I'll ask for it. And we've swayed so far over into the opinion side now. Do you think it'll ever come back, David?
I don't. We're at a point now, we're going through a revolution of a lot of men are at the point where male and female should be equal. We should be getting equal pay. If they are more qualified or qualified, they should get the job, So I think we're at a point where, men are now agreeing that the female persuasion and the male persuasion should be equal to a point. Well, there's a lot of going on where people who are slow getting to that or making up or doing things to make it fit their need.
Let me give you an example of that, David. Can I interject an example of where the press could be very powerful? Is I think far more than the minority, a majority of the people in the United States would say, I don't care if you're a male, a female, a man, a woman, a black man, a white man, an Asian. If you are talented and you have the equal talent or better talent, you should be paid based on what you're being hired for. You're not being hired in most cases. I know there are exceptions, but in most cases, if you're being hired for the talent and what you bring to the team or what you bring to the leadership, it shouldn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. I know that's idealistic, but I think we'd all agree with that. And if we're finally getting around to that, kudos for that. But we should have been there a long, long time ago. But here again, the press, the media could say, look, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to foster an environment here where we're almost going to force you to come to terms with why a man and a woman should be paid equal. What are the parameters? Why should they be? And they could present almost in a way that we could debate with them in our minds of why that's justified. To me, it's clear as can be. It should be based on talent. But they could be a huge role in that, but they're not. They're not. I'm speaking in generalities here. And so there again, there's a role where, and the reason I keep going back to that, they influence more people faster than anybody else in the population of the United States. I mean, they have more access to us and all of that. So they have a power that you and I don't have.
That's true. What do you want to talk about?
What do I want to talk about?
We're sitting around over the years. We've always come up with these conversations, and we never had to think. We just come out with it. So I'm hoping that's what you're going to do right now.
I am. I've been disturbed about these conversations about abortion. I know there's some cases and some situations than when truly maybe an abortion of some side is the best thing. I mean, I tend to lean, I'm a pro-life person, But I would never say under, to me, right or wrong, whether you like my answer or not, there can always be some situation. Because when you say pro-life, what does that mean? The life of the mother, the life of the infant, what? Life is life. So there's going to be situations where you, unfortunately, maybe they have to pick. But this business about going further and further and further and further and further and further into the cycle of a child being growing in a mother's womb and then being born scares the living daylights out of me. I mean, if half of what I hear is true, I mean, where you heard that one, the Virginia governor talk about, well, here's how it would happen, and we bring the baby out, and we make the baby comfortable, and this and that, and then we'll decide what to do. What? What? How can you decide then what to do? The child has been born. I can't believe we're having that kind of conversation. Can you?
No, not at this point. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me.
But I've never thought though, David, that there's an, the only absolute and the one with absolute action is the greater power that guides you, whether that's God, whether that's some other form that helps you and guides you in your decision making and those around you. You still there? Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I was trying to get a caller on the line.
Oh, okay. So it's just scary.
Okay. I have a caller who is a female out of Los Angeles, and I want to get her opinion on a couple of things. One is the first conversation we were having about equal pay and women and the position, but also this that you just brought up. Caller in Los Angeles, how are you? Hello?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, good. Thank you. So you listened to the conversation we just had on that Bruce just brought up. What is your opinion on that? And Bruce, you might want to, if you want to just briefly just what you just said, so she knows what you're saying. I think she understands.
On which one? On the abortion issue?
Yes.
Yeah. What I said. What caller? Since I don't know your name. What I said was that I got to believe that there might be a case or some situation, I can't identify what it is, where when we say pro-life, it can have to be a choice between the life of the mother or the life of the newborn child or about to be born child. Difficult, but I believe that there can be those situations. Short of that, setting that situation aside, what scares me, and I was telling David, our host, that we're going further and further and further and further into the trimester, to basically the point where the baby comes out of a woman's womb, is born in every sense of the word, and then they're going to decide what to do. That scares the living daylights out of me. What do you think about that?
First of all, I would ask, who's going to make this decision, whether it's
the
mother, you know, or the baby? Who are we giving that power to make that decision? That needs to be clarified first and foremost.
May I add one thing to that, only because I'm glad you brought that up? And shouldn't the father be part of that, too? We haven't heard one word about – the mother does all the heavy lifting. I agree with that, but the baby was created in a way where there were two people involved, not just one. And I would like to add that the father should play a role in that decision-making process too. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, but you know, I remember back in the 70s, before a woman could get her tubes tied, she'd have to get her husband's permission. So I think that's kind of gone by the wayside now, but I agree with you. The husband should have a determination in this, but then it's usually the woman that ends up taking care of the baby anyway in the end. So it's kind of either way, you know, does,
yeah.
you know, does he have a, or does he want to make it? Is he going to be able to say, I don't want to get involved and I don't want to make a decision? Let her do it.
And well,
I guess he's making a decision if he says that, isn't he?
Yes, he is. So I don't know. I think the government is too involved in this. The government has a way of saying that, you know, women can't have abortions, but I don't see where the government is stepping up to support these women after they don't have the abortion, help them raising their kids, teaching them how to raise kids, making sure they have enough money to be able to raise these children. I think the government needs to get more involved in the after than what's going on before.
Well, there's also, as we know, there's a huge demand for people that would like to adopt children. So there'll never be enough babies that apparently one person may not want that another person would cherish. That'll always be there.
Right, right. But why do we have so many children in the foster system then?
That's a good point. You scratch your head on that a little bit, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I see people saying they want to adopt, but the foster care system is overrun with children that nobody wants.
Well, that's because most people want babies. And,
yeah, they want to start, yeah.
Yeah, and then the care system, after you've had the baby and you treat the baby wrong for years and years, then the foster care system comes in and the older child, 5 years and up, are in foster care because everybody wants a baby. Well, not everybody wants a baby, but it seems that most people who want to adopt want a baby.
Yeah.
So we have to get more into explaining, because the foster care system doesn't do very much in educating people how raising a child who's 3 to 18 can be. As a matter of fact, most people will tell you they do not want a child that's past, you know, 10 or 11 years old, which is a bulk of our foster care system. But anyway,
right.
So for the caller, I want to ask another question. Bruce, point you were making up, can you explain that a little bit?
Which point?
The one before, the one on, we were talking about equal pay for male, females. And
Yes. LA caller, law caller, if I may call you that way, it sounds French.
I like that.
La caller. the Midwest and the East can laugh with the West. Why can't our politicians do that? I don't know. But to David's point, when we talked about the business of I'm having a senior moment, David.
women not making the same amount of money.
Yes. Thank you, luck caller. To me, it's clear as can be. It's idealistic for some people, but it's the way I've always lived my life, and I've managed people, and I've been a part of a team. If a female or a male, it should be based on the talent you bring to the team. If I don't care if it's an African American man or woman, Asian, I know it's an ideal, but the ideals are what we should be working towards, constantly working towards. If what you're buying is the talent, or what you're hiring is the talent for that team, what difference, what shape it is in, what it looks like, what color it is, whether they have a southern accent or a northern accent, or eastern or western, they have a suntan or they don't, what difference should that make? It should not make a difference at all. Does it? Unfortunately, yes. But the goal should always be you hire for the talent, you pay the talent, period.
Right. Well, I've always thought that you hire fashion, talent, and
yep.
if they're capable of doing the job.
I'm glad you brought up passion, because I've been fortunate enough in my career. I'm retired now, but in my career, you know, the corny saying is you never work a day in your life if you really enjoy your work and you're passionate about it. I had that kind of luck. And even the long hours and all that, if you're passionate about something, mm-hmm. people will see that. People will respond to that. And my clients would always say when we'd be end of a job, I was a contractor and a consultant, luck caller. And they would always say, I'd say, well, why did you hire our company? He said, well, you were just so passionate about what you did. You mm-hmm. can't fake passion. Well, I believe you. And that stuck with me. You can't fake passion, can you?
No, you can't. You can't. And if somebody is passionate about their job, I agree with you. No matter what nationality, race, culture, gender, they should be paid the salary across the board. I don't know why that's so hard to do. They've made laws to make it legal for everybody to be paid the same, but it still goes on in corporate America all the time.
There's a new rule, and I know in Los Angeles and California it is, that all businesses have to have a room for a lady for, what is the word for?
To be on the executive team. Let's see, how do you say that? To be up in the upper management. And they're saying for companies.
No, I'm talking about the room for nursing, for the woman to be able to get milk for the baby.
Oh, breastfeeding. Okay, we just had that at work. We had to turn a room into it. It came into effect the 1st of January. Every company that has over 25 employees has to have a designated room for women to pump who are breastfeeding on the job. So we just had to turn a room into a breastfeeding room.
So,
because we have one person.
So, look, caller.
Yes.
If I'm hearing you right, creating the breast milk is a necessity for the child,
yes.
and probably rightly so. So she has to have a way to produce that and keep it. That sounds like a good idea. But the children aren't involved in the workplace, right?
No. No.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Because we it can't be a bathroom, because that's what we used before. We had a private bathroom where this one person could go pump and they would put signs on the door. And the law clearly states it cannot be a bathroom.
For what reason can it not be a bathroom? I think I know, but you tell me.
I think maybe because it's just not appropriate. I mean, even though we have the signs and everything, people walk in on her all the time.
And probably isn't as sanitary either.
Yeah, because she would always complain. She said, that bathroom is so dirty. It's just so dirty. Because nobody was cleaning it, because they thought it wasn't in use, because it had sign over there, not for general staff.
Right, right. But we get... You know, I've often thought that so many problems that we have either in the workplace or in our social life, if you get people one-on-one, they can solve it almost every time.
Yeah.
We get committees involved and stances taken and positions that have to be defended. We never get anything solved, it seems like.
Okay, I want to take, again, you're listening to The Man's Voice, and we're glad you're there. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 646-668-8740. But I also want to say, we were going to do a little small sports segment today, and the sports commentator who comes on every once in a while, Spencer, he is on the air, but I do know that Spencer is a young man who's just getting out of his 20s, and pretty soon I know that there are girls after him to marry them, and so my question to him, if one of these girls you end up dating and wanting to marry her and marry her, but she says she doesn't want kids, but she's pregnant and she wants an abortion. But do you feel that you should be part of that decision making, or do you feel that that's a decision that she should be making? Did you run away, Spencer? Oh, there we go.
I would say it's a decision that we both need to be making. I mean, if we're together in this relationship, let me understand your question. Is she wants to have the abortion and not me?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying she wants to have an abortion, and she thinks that it's her decision to make that decision. What do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's both of our decisions, because obviously I'm the one that created the child, whether it was planned or not. I still feel like I should have a say so and the abortion of the child. I mean, if it comes down to it, then I would take care of the child if she doesn't want to have it. But I feel like I definitely deserve to have a say so as far as if the baby's been born or not.
So this is a decision that you feel should be consensual. And what if she says she's not going to listen to you because it's not healthy for her? So she's going to do it anyway. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's a tough one there. You know, a situation like this, you know, what can a man do? You know, it's not like, I mean, we could argue, we could fuss. We could, only thing I would say, we could just talk the woman out of it to the best of our ability. But there's not much that we can do because it's not our bodies. So they could go at any time and have the abortion, you know. You could be going to work or school or whatever and just come home the next day, and then she tells you, I went and got an abortion. So there's nothing much that you can do. But
you don't feel right now that you have the right to have an opinion, or you don't feel that your opinion counts right now? Not that it doesn't count, but that there is no way for you to effectively get... How do I want to say this? That if she decides to go ahead and do it, then go ahead and do it, but you were against it, that there's nothing you can do about it?
No.
Do you think there should be a ruling about that? I mean, there's a lot of...
I guess that's where the line is getting drawn.
Well, there's a lot of, you know, Planned Parenthood and a lot of conversation about this issue right now, but so you're saying in this issue there should also be a component that allows the male to be part of the decision making on the life of the...
Well, I think David, some males already have a... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Spencer, I was just going to add on to your conversation. What if we flipped it around and said, tell me why the male portion of the creation of this child should not have a say. Convince me why they shouldn't. Because I tend to think that they should. So I want to hear someone tell me why it should be only one party of the two and not the other. Any more as it should be... the child maybe is completely carried by the woman. The child is about to be born, and the father gets a complete say-so, and the mother gets no say at all. They would be irate about that, and rightly so. I tend to agree. The child, the miracle, was created by two. Whatever happens in the custodial appearance, in the loosest sense of the world, until the child can be on their own, should be decision-making should be done by that team. So I would love to have someone convince to me or call you, David, and tell me why the male component of this should not have some kind of rights and a say. in it, in the decision. I think they should.
All right. So, Spencer, you were answering the question at the end. Did we cut you off? What were you going to say? And our caller, Angeles, do you have what are your thoughts on this on what Spencer's saying?
In answer to Bruce's question, I think the woman should have more say because it affects her body and her life. You know, men leave all the time. It's the women that usually stay and raise the child. So that, I mean, I could see that being the reason that they would let her make that decision.
But caller, aren't you automatically assuming that all, aren't you, you can't automatically assume, please don't, and I don't think you are, that all the guys are less than honorable and fatherly. For those that are, and maybe like you said, that factor comes into play if the father component disappears, never to be seen again. I understand that. But if he's a stand up guy and he's there and so forth, he should be directly involved in it just as much.
And I think this should be a conversation that should be had at the beginning of the relationship. Don't wait until this happens to have that conversation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It better be.
But things could change as the relationship go along. Like, you could have the conversation, and then the woman could have a change of heart because of whatever. Of course. Let's say, you know, she could just have a change of heart, and that's why I say on this situation we have our hands tied because we're not carrying a baby, and since we're not carrying a baby, we really don't have a say so. I mean, we have a say so, we have an opinion, but our opinion can either matter, but most of the time it don't matter because they're gonna do what they want to do,
right?
Because it's their bodies.
But it should matter.
The law has designed it that way. Once again, the government is in that picture. And according to our caller, the government should be backing out of that picture because right now, based on law, that is why that is like that. But I think if more men had more opinions, more men would be closer involved in the relationship. But they don't. They don't feel they have the say so because of law. What's your opinion on that, Bruce?
How many courts of law that have their heads on straight, and a lot of them do, would disregard a husband that went in the court of law and say, hey, wait a minute, yes, my ex-wife, my wife, my girlfriend, whatever, yes, she bore the child, all this and that. But it was created in a team effort, if I can be unemotional about it. And I want to be involved and I let's say she wants to have an abortion or end it, and I'm saying no, you can't. I don't agree with that. That they would just discount what the husband or boyfriend or ex-husband would say. I got to believe that they would not. That they're going to take all of that into account, and heaven help us if they don't.
I want to change the conversation a little bit because I want to get on something that I thought grabbed my attention. And of course, it's happened in Florida, and our people are here today. But in Florida recently, the school there, a large child school, which in South Florida, actually it's in Lakeland, where, you know, a lot has gone on in Lakeland, Florida recently, but they arrested an 11-year-old kid because he refused to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. It was a substitute teacher, and she told the young man to, they were doing the Pledge of Allegiance, and he said he wasn't standing because the flag represents race. It's racist, and he didn't want to do it. Well, the teacher got into an argument with him, so they got into a big argument. She, in return, called the police. They came, and because of the argument, because he refused to stand, they arrested him and took him to juvenile hall. I think that is wrong on so many levels to me. What do you think, Spencer?
He said that the flag represented
racism. Yeah, he thought that America, his comment to the police, the reason he didn't stand was the flag is just racist. Why should he stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? And the substitute teacher, you know, kept saying, you know, well, this is your flag. You were here. And he said, this is not, we were brought here under this flag. This is not his flag. And so he refuses to stand up. So when the police came, she had him arrested for getting into a confrontation argument with her. He says, you know, the teacher was the one who escalated the issue because she felt that the argument she was having with him, she wasn't dealing with the class. But she was a substitute teacher anyway. I don't know why the principal or the school allowed this to happen, in my opinion. And the school district says the 11-year-old was arrested after becoming disruptive and refusing to follow repeated instructions by school staff and law enforcement. But according to the school district, they did say that the students can opt out of reciting the Pledge of Allegiance upon written authorization from their parents. And he did not have written authorization from his parents. So what do you think, Bruce?
Well, you know, it's easy for a lot of us, including myself, to judge from the sidelines. But here's my judgment, which you asked for. 11-year-old child, you could really mess a child up, whether you intended to or not, by hauling him into a judicial action for not standing up for the flag. I'm as patriotic a person as you could ever see, but I guess my thought would be, teachers stand for teaching. And I would love it if this teacher could have found a way to say or handle this in a way that it could be a teaching moment. Because when that 11-year-old said, I don't like this flag because it's racist and that, he didn't come up with that himself. He was taught that by somebody. He was told that by somebody. It was shown to him. And whether it's valid or not, that teacher could have said, well, okay, if that's how you feel right now, let me tell you a different perspective of what that flag represents, and maybe show that very young boy that may or may not be true in your mind, but I want you to hear both sides, all the facts of what this flag represents. And it would have been great if you would have heard that happen, is what I'm saying.
I think you're so right. They're teachers. They're teaching moments. They need to take these moments. You know, I agree with that. What about the caller from Los Angeles? Sorry. What is your opinion?
Well, first of all, it shouldn't have escalated to them calling the police. They have a procedure that they do at school. They send them to the principal's office. Don't they still do that? I think the substitute teacher overreacted. And
right.
Arresting an 11-year-old kid for that is like, I can't believe they did that. He wasn't hurting anybody. Nobody was in danger. So I think that.
Can you imagine 11-year-old and the police come in to see you, take you out of school, and all you did was refuse? You know, it's like Kaepernick. He kneeled down, so he got in trouble. Well, it's kind of the same thing where everybody now, he's settled, and I don't know what that settlement was, but.
I'll
you know,
tell
in
you
other words,
what it was.
The long-term thing is you can work it out. Rather than causing a big ruckus, especially in a school. 11 years old would have to be like sixth grade. I mean, the police handcuffing you and take you out and taking you to juvenile, it's just mind-boggling. And I guess my point is the way our education system is going, the way some people are using certain things to, that was a time when that instructor, in my opinion, should have used that, as Bruce was saying, as an enlightenment or a teaching moment. What do you think, Spencer?
Yes, I agree. I just can't believe that an 11-year-old kid actually got arrested, that you need to call the cops on an 11-year-old kid. And I also agree with what Bruce said, how it should have been a teaching moment in that instance to you know, to ask questions. Why do you feel this way? What do you know? Or, you know, educate the kid instead of just calling the police off rip. I don't understand that. In today's time that we have to call the police on kids, you know, minors, 11 years old. And
what about his freedom of speech?
Yes. What happened to freedom of speech? I guess we don't have freedom of speech anymore.
And here's another aspect. That dialogue, let's call it, between the teacher and that 11-year-old child was being observed by all the other kids in that room. And they absorbed that. That's a teaching moment for them, right, wrong, good, or bad. They all took something away from that. And I'll venture to say it was more bad than good. So if there were another 15, 20 kids in that room, they were all a part of that too.
That's right.
That's not good.
I mean, that was a big negative for that school. But what's going on in Florida? Everything happens in Florida.
Or Virginia.
Or Virginia right now. You're right. All right. Go ahead, Bruce.
I was just going to say if we can't use committee and consensus to come to solutions, which is what it used to be intended for, then maybe we ought to go back to Spencer and I have a disagreement. If La Caller and I have an agreement, if you and I have an argument, maybe we start settling everything one-on-one. It seems to me when you get people one-on-one and they really are forced to talk to each other, really talk to each other or work it out, it seems like it can be worked out faster, easier, and better than committees these days. That's what I think.
Okay. We're getting down to what? Oh, 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left. Any last comments from anyone? Our call from Los Angeles. Is there anything you would like to ask any of the panelists?
No, but I do want to compliment Bruce. I've listened to the show for quite a while, and I'm always intrigued about your knowledge base. So,
you sweetheart. I love you. Thank you.
Oh, no.
Quit swelling his head. Quit it. No. He's right. He's perfectly right. All right.
Well,
I appreciate
that. And French caller, La Caller, you call back again, will you please?
Sure. No problem.
All right. And have your friends in the room. We want more caller involvement. It makes the program even more interesting.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right.
Well, you're listening to the man's voice here, and we want to thank everyone for calling in. We're down to 60-second mark. So I think one of the things that's out coming up soon, you might have to look at your calendars to figure it out, is called the snow moon, which is the moon is going to be bigger and wider than usual. It's full of snow. It's not full of snow, but they call it the snow moon. It's coming up soon. So all those people who love photography, and now I notice that we're all great photographers now that we have smartphones. There was a time when photography was specialized. Now everybody's photographers.
And,
so when you go out now, go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I was going to leave you with also a reason for our caller to call back and for you to ask. Ask me next week. I'll tell you about the ghost apples, as in GHOST, ghost apples that were found in Kent County, Michigan.
Oh,
wow.
I saw that on TV. I'm interested in that because they never explained to me how that happened. Where did the apple go?
Well, I'll explain it to you next week.
Okay.
So you call
all
back.
Right.
All right. You've been listening to the man's voice, and we hope to see you, hear you, or talk to you again next week. And we hope everyone calls in. So everyone have a great week, and thanks for our callers. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Spencer. Have a nice week, everyone.
Thank you.
You too. Have a nice week, everybody.
You too. Everybody have a nice week.
Go out and hug. Go out and hug somebody. Thank you.